This episode of Robin's a Podcast, catching up with Sean Clements from the Hollywood Handbook Podcast, is sponsored by our friends over at Hyundai, makers of the all-new Hyundai Tucson, where they questioned everything. Learn more at Hyundai.com. Hey everybody, what's going on? Rob Cesternino here, and we have a special treat here today because we have a fellow podcaster who is here to talk about his love of Survivor and much more. You know him from the Hollywood Handbook podcast and also the Flagrant Ones. Let's welcome in TV writer and Survivor superfan, Sean Clements is here. Sean, how are you?
I'm doing great, Rob. Thanks so much for having me. I really appreciate you making time to let me talk Survivor with you on the show.
Yeah, Sean, this is such a nice treat that I got an email from your producer who said that you wanted to come on and talk a little bit about Survivor, and I just thought that that was so cool.
Yeah, well, I think a lot of people, I got into a kind of deep dive Survivor binge during the lockdown quarantine time. And that led me to find your show, and my friend Jason Concepcion came on, and and it made me believe that I too could come on the show once I saw that someone I knew had done it. I asked Kevin to reach out and he did his job.
Yeah. So you were always a Survivor fan, though, correct? And then you went back and started watching it over again?
I was a fan. I was a big reality show fan, and I had I actually hosted a podcast called The Reality Show back in 2011, maybe, where we covered a lot of shows, including Survivor, which was a show that I had seen seasons of and checked in and out of, but I hadn't been any kind of completist at all. It's like I watched Outback when it aired because it was such a phenomenon, and then I came back and watched a season here or there, and then I would not have cable or I would miss out. And then when we were doing that show, I dove back in, and that was during, it was a good period because it was during Philippines, I think was the first one that we were covering on that, and then Karamoan, and then of course I got to meet Cochran, and he came on our other podcast a few times, so I got some inside scoop from him, and I think we watched all the way up through maybe like San Juan del Sur at the time, and then I kind of fell off it again when we stopped doing that show. And I was telling you this before, but a lot of respect for what you do, because what we found was my co-host Hayes Davenport and I, we had met working writing for a television show. So we both had jobs and we were doing this podcast every week that required us to watch like 6 hours of reality TV and be like up to date and pull clips and have takes. And it was really exhausting. And so then we said, we love doing this podcast, but can we do one that is less work? And that led us to Hollywood Handbook. It was the first 10 minutes of every show before we got into Survivor and reality shows. We would do this fake catch up on our week where we like made up stories where we'd say like, hey, how was your South by Southwest? And we'd talk about the people we met. And it was just this kind of corny, fake Hollywood guy speak. And then we just said, can this be the whole show? It's more fun and it's easier to do. So that transitioned into Handbook. But when we stopped doing reality show, I kind of fell off because it made me like want to take a break a little from like really watching that much. But now I'm all the way back in.
So, could you tell us a little bit about your journey into Survivor? Did you go back to just like cherry pick certain seasons?
I did, and I made some mistakes, I'll be honest. I reached out to Jason and Cochran and a couple other fans I knew, and I said, where should I start? Yeah. Including one of the guys, this guy, John Blickstead, who, I think had talked to you about being a guest at one point.
And what I passed?
No, you reached out to him and he got too nervous.
Yeah.
And he got scared and couldn't do it. And he told me before I came on that, you know, kind of like a father forcing his dreams onto his son, mm-hmm. that he like really wanted me to get on and succeed where he hadn't been able to like go pro and be a Rob Has a Podcast guest.
You did it.
But he was writing for a show that was a little bit about the generation divide between millennials and Gen X at the same time that season was airing.
Mm-hmm.
And he's seen every season like 5 times. And a lot of people said, I had seen Kageyan, which was a lot of people's number one.
Yeah.
And the other common recommendation was Heroes versus Villains, season 20. And since I hadn't watched that one at the time, I said, let me start with this. And man, did I spoil so much for myself with all these returning players. And I really now want to watch it again because I have so much more context now that I've gone back and watched Cook Islands and Micronesia and all these other seasons that these people came from and Tokachins and all these other great seasons. Now I'm like, well, now I would really appreciate Heroes versus Villains, which was great and entertaining, but I think I was missing so many of the subplots and everything by watching it first mm-hmm. in my binge. But I did that and I went in order like 2020. I skipped Nicaragua because that I was told that one wasn't that good. Mm-hmm. Then I did like, for some reason, someone did tell me to watch South Pacific and Redemption Island, which aren't well regarded, but I enjoyed them.
Mm-hmm.
And then I kind of went up through the 20s a little bit. Then I went way back. And ashamed to admit, at the time, I was told that Pearl Islands was the first really good season. So I had just missed you and was watching forward from 7. Now, once I got booked on this show, I said, let me do a little Amazon Cramazon. And I went back and I watched the whole thing this weekend.
Yes.
And all respect to a legend, I understand the legacy. You were years ahead of your time. It was really fun. A lot of great sound bites. Now look, the gender split idea 17, 18
Does
years
it
ago,
it
resulted in some uncomfortable sound bites. Yeah, no, who am I to say whether this is how we should talk about men and women?
Sure.
But honestly, was really good, thrilling. I knew that you didn't end up making it through, but man, to sit at Final Tribal and have both the people up there say that you deserve the seat more than them. Has it ever happened before or since?
I don't know.
I mean, I don't think so. So that was pretty cool. And yeah, you kind of introduced this strategy, but I haven't seen every single season now. I still have a couple blank spots. I started Gabon today.
Yeah.
I'm into the weird ones, the ones that people go like, this one's like, the strategy's not good, but the characters are weird. But I think I've watched 32 or 33 of the 40 seasons in the past like couple months.
So let me ask you about, because what you did is not unusual, that there are a lot of people that happen to say, hey, I'm locked down. Let me check out Survivor. I never have gone through it, or I watch it, but I fell off it. What is it, do you think, about this particular show that a lot of people turn to it during the lockdown?
You know, I knew there was a lot of content there. When I was covering it for Reality Show, you know, we usually talked about goofy stuff. We made a supercut of Jeff Probst saying beautiful baked potato. We had some stuff like that would be what made up our segments. But I just thought, and I would say this annoyingly at the time, like, God, this is such a well-designed game.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the craft of the game is so good, and it's so funny that famously production was, like, annoyed that Richard Hatch was using strategy at the beginning, where they were like, it should just be about, like, who deserves to be here, when what they had was a game that you could apply all these different strategies and ideas to. So I think that, you know, there's an unpredictability and there's like and obviously good casting really helps. I mean, that was why I asked, like, what should I start with? Cause I wanted to get hooked. Like, I wanted to watch a season that would make me go like, I want to watch more. And and it was good for that. But for me, I don't know if this is how other people feel. I am possibly a little bit of a narcissist or something, but I love to imagine what I would do in these spots. Yeah. And I feel like that's so much of the appeal, and that because the people are unpredictable and there's a different texture every time and what tribe you're on dictates it, you wind up in all these really varied situations where you're putting yourself in people's shoes and going, oh my God, I can't believe they did that. Like, I would have handled that better. Or, whoa, how did they realize that that was like what they needed to do to get through this next vote? And I think there's just a real fun in, there's a participatory element in watching it where you kind of put yourself in the shoes of the people there, on top of just enjoying reality TV personalities.
Who have you been sharing all your Survivor takes with as you've been going through this catalog?
I text Jason a lot. Yeah.
Cause he's doing his own binge. Like, he's, yeah.
Yep. He's going through it, and he's going out of order too. Mm-hmm. Because he texted me actually, the student became the teacher last night because he said, I'm watching our friends Cochran and Coach on Karamoan. And I said, actually, if Coach is there, you're watching South Pacific, Jason.
Mm-hmm.
And I hate to blow him up on a show that I know he listens to, but this is what happened. I had to educate my teacher.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's
it's a little bit, it was a big milestone like for me. Not like the Coach and Cochran relationship where...
Isn't it true? Yeah.
That, you know, Coach brought Cochran in, and then, Cochran, Lou, he comes back and wins. Coach has never won the game.
He broke it down for him. Yeah. And then ultimately he was coached until and then Cochran became a coach to Debbie when they met out on that boat in Game Changers.
Yeah.
And shared probably to me the most natural, normal hug I've ever seen two people have. Mm-hmm. It felt really good to witness that.
Mm-hmm.
Two people who belonged in a conversation. and she was receptive to his strategy advice as well.
Yeah, she called him Mr. Cochran.
Yes, which I thought was a fitting amount of respect.
Very much so, yeah.
You know, you've had Cochran on, and you've talked to him, and he's an unusual guy, you know?
Yeah.
But I've shared with him too. I text him questions and he gives me a little bit of dirt.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He's really tapped in. He has a lot of the stories.
He offers up, he goes like, hey, if you want to know any juice on one of your favorite players, let me know. And then I'll text him and go like, what about this person? He'll go like, you know, I don't know them very well. So he holds back. But the question I had for him that was somewhat adequately answered, but you wouldn't be able to help me with it because this wasn't a part of the game when you played.
You don't know. You don't know what I could help you with or not.
But maybe someone has told you. They show this footage where someone will find an idol and then they will hide their idol.
Yeah.
And they will say, like, I had to go hide it. I had to go bury it. And it feels like it's never discussed. Other people will be aggressively hunting for idols. Mm-hmm. Now, you've just found this hidden idol. How has no one ever found...
Wrong idol. Yeah.
A reburied idol. You know what I mean? Like, no one has found one that is being, like, hidden for safekeeping. Because sometimes they're sticking it in a tree or something, apparently. And they're going to... I'll come back and get this before tribal council. But no one has ever found, to my knowledge, someone else's idol and thought they were discovering their own.
So this is a really good question. I think there's a couple things that are going on here. One, I don't think you're allowed to take somebody else's idol. But I've always contested, like, if I left my idol out and, like, Boston Rob or Russell Hance comes over and says, hey, finders keepers, losers weepers. Like, oh, that's good. That's great. Oh, that's great. That's never happened before. But I do think it's supposed to be in the rules that you can't take somebody else's idol. So I guess, what is possession? Is it like, do I have to have it on my person to have it? Like, you can't take it if I'm like doing an interview, go through my bag and take my idol. So if I hid it in a tree and then you found it, like, I don't know if the producer says, actually, you know, that's not your idol. That's another person's idol. But with, I think a lot of times they bury it under the ground. They have a spot where they bury the idol. And when players are looking for the idol, I feel like often they're not like digging in the dirt.
They're not digging unless they have a clue that says like, this is where you should dig.
Yeah.
That makes sense to me. But like, yeah, I agree with you. I like, it does seem, no, you're not allowed to take someone else's idol. But I would think even if someone just found it and now knew that there was an idol in the game that was found, mm-hmm. like, would they leave that in? I guess not. They don't want to have production explaining that it's not yours to someone. The thing Cochran told me that made a little bit of sense, because I said, are they really keeping it hidden, or are they handing it to production and going like, hey, you know,
yeah, can I check this idol here for a minute?
And he said, no, they can't do that. But then he did tell me that when he was holding Ozzy's idol, and maybe I shouldn't be sharing this, he might get mad at me. I think he said that he kept his glasses with the medical kit, which was with production, and he like was allowed to like put the idol like in his glasses case. But he also told me that people hide it near where everyone goes to the bathroom, and that the designated bathroom spot would be a place to hide the idol, yeah. because no one's going to be digging around there.
Oh, that's interesting. So the I hadn't heard that about the digging like a hole near where people are going to the bathroom, because sometimes people dig a hole to go to the bathroom. They might find it inadvertently. But the medical kit is just sort of like a plastic box. So I don't know, for whatever reason, I guess that he wasn't worried. Like, everybody knew he had it. So
yeah, on that season, it was very public that he had it mm-hmm. already, so it didn't really matter. Yeah. But yeah, the bathroom thing kind of made sense to me, that it also was very easy then to, if you're about to go to tribal council, go like, hang on, I got to run to the bathroom, and you can go and get your item. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that makes some sense. Have you taken anything from Survivor, and have you been able to incorporate it in any of the writer's rooms you've been in or workplace? Because they say that, you know, Survivor is basically like a workplace, and it's the same way that people get ahead at work. That's really the skill set that you need to succeed on Survivor.
That's interesting. You know, so much of my work experience right now has been like, it's Zoom yeah. room days. Like, it's not there. You don't have much of the office politics. A lot of when I was watching, I was working on this show that was filming in Boston. So I was in Boston away from my family. This is also why I was watching like a season every 3 days. Cause I had left my family here in Los Angeles and flown to Boston. I lived in like a corporate apartment, and, there wasn't much chance to do any social strategies, because we were wearing, you know, a mask and goggles and a little tracker device that if you stood within 6 feet of someone, it blinked, and then you got like a bad report card at the end of the week that said like, hey, you stood too close to someone for 15 minutes. Yeah. And it was for contact tracing, so that if someone did like pop positive, yeah. you could say, here are the three people that they were within 6 feet of in the past week, and we need to test them and pull them yeah. out for quarantine right away. So I haven't gotten to employ anything, but I guess I would say that certainly in writers' rooms I've worked in, there is, you know, often like a legitimate hierarchy, and yeah. then sort of a naturally occurring hierarchy that starts to form. And I could have used some of the Survivor skills in some of the rooms I was in, where I probably could have played my hand a little better. Mm-hmm.
Can I ask you, Ed, that is there a Survivor contestant that you have seen over your many, many seasons that this person is in every writer's room and we may not realize it?
Wow, that's a good question. Is there a Survivor cast that feels like they're in every writer's room? Well, I mean, the easy answers here are some of these players are writers, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
Like, you've got your David Wright. Mm-hmm. He feels like someone who's in a room to yeah. me. You've got your Penner. Okay, I could see collaborating with Penner. He feels like he's got that sort of storyteller element.
I'm
he's
like
got
a little showbiz to him. Who are the good guys? Who are the bad guys?
That definitely exists. I guess I learned that Malcolm's a writer, but I didn't feel like I knew him. But there are certain types mm-hmm. that recur. I mean, you know, there's your Denise type who would be sort of like has that kind of den mother feeling where it's like, this is the person you go to, things are getting messed up and you just need to unload to somebody in the room. I think the person who, so my, you know, I don't know if this will be controversial. My personal favorite season, right now at least, has been David versus Goliath. Yeah. And the cast was incredible, but it had the kind of modern pacing. And Angelina from that season is a very specific type of reality show person and type of person I have encountered where, man, at the beginning, she was driving me nuts. And I was like, I hope she gets voted off. But by the end, I really grew to love her because... Yeah, there's that famous, there's like that quote in, I can't remember the name of the character, but in Jackie Brown, when they're talking about Bridget Fonda's character, it's like, if it's like Bunny or something, it's like, I can't trust Bunny, but I trust Bunny to be Bunny. Mm-hmm. Like this isn't, this person is predictable because the way in which they're unpredictable is so consistent. Yeah. And it's like, I really trusted Angelina to be Angelina. Like, she was always going to do something that I found sort of funny and endearing. She was not self-aware at all, but she was so consistently unself-aware that I was like, you're not messing with me. Mm-hmm. You know, you're not doing any, none of this is malicious. This is who you are. And I feel like you meet a lot of that type of person around writers, especially, you know, writing is somewhat solitary, but then, when you do it for television, it's a collaborative environment. Yeah. So you have these people come in who at first you go like, why are you behaving like that? You like, you're dealing with other people. Like, don't you see how that's perceived? And then it's like, oh no, you actually don't see how it's perceived. And it kind of becomes endearing over time.
Sean, have you given any thought to Survivor 41 and what it might be like?
Well, the funny meme that I saw online was that it's going to be Moderna versus Pfizer versus Johnson & Johnson. Yes. In terms of what the theme is, well, I guess I'd ask you, how do you feel about the shortened season?
Yeah, it doesn't bother me. It really doesn't, because I feel like that the stuff that's, you know, listen, all the survivors are going to complain about it. Oh, like, I might be one of the only Survivor alumni that's like, eh, this isn't that big a deal. It's almost like, you know, if you heard about like a movie and it's like, well, you know, instead of shooting, you know, 28 days on this movie, you know, we're going to shoot like a 17 day. Like that's probably a bad example because like that you need all those days, but there's off days on Survivor. So like get it down to 26 days. You know, people like most of the times are zombies by the time they get to, you know, past day 30. Anyway, it's not going to feel different. Like, what do you care if they go to tribal council every 2 days versus every 3 days?
Well, that's what I guess what I wanted to ask you is like, you know, if you watch a lot of reality shows, if you watch The Challenge or Bachelor and Bachelorette or something like that, a lot of times what they do is they're obviously filming at very strange hours and they give these people a lot of alcohol. And so you get these big emotional blowups and stuff that happen. And the personal dynamics are heightened because they're sleep deprived and they're drunk. On Survivor, it seems like it happens because they're so hungry and they're so deprived of like other creature comforts. And I was curious whether the 39 days, just the length of time that you go with not eating and with your sleeping disrupted, if it really felt that different at day 39 than it did at day 29. I don't know. Yeah. Like, it seems like maybe you reach a plateau where this is how hungry I am and it's how it's going to feel. And
I really think that this also reflects that. I think that in the early days of the show, like, I think that there was like a question of like, oh, this is gripping. How far can we push people on television?
Yeah.
Like, how far? And I feel like that's kind of not in vogue to see, you know, how much can these people suffer? How much can we torture these people? Where let's get them there. You get your game. People are in less like physical danger because of the malnutrition. And, you know, they're still hungry. They're still starving. You get everything that you want. And, you know, you can, you know, knock these things out shorter.
I agree. I mean, I don't want to see medical evacuations. I don't, you know, even watching your season and Heidi's spider bite knee, I was like, I feel like you don't see that as much now that the snakes and spiders mm-hmm. are really, you know, on top of the contestants as frequently as mm-hmm. they used to
yeah,
be.
Yeah, that's weird.
Probably a product of Fiji being the only location.
Might be safer.
Too.
Yeah.
But yeah, it doesn't bother me either. Like, I feel like whatever, it's a slightly faster pace, but I didn't know if, the reason the other survivors would be mad is like the enduring it, aspect won't be as yeah. great. Although, like you said, it feels like they learned, like, there are so many more food challenges mm-hmm. now. Like, the rewards in your season, were not as robust yeah. as the food rewards that they seem to get, in the more modern seasons. Like, it seems like they kind of want to have people a little more
mm-hmm. yeah.
fed so that they're not in danger.
I think that the survivors have kind of learned, like, they're not going to let us die. They're not going to let us starve. Yeah. Let's eat all the rice and then, this is a game of chicken with the producers. Like, they'll come, they'll take something. Okay. Whoop-de-doo. Let's eat.
Yeah. That's interesting. Yeah. That they've kind of learned that they can push the boundaries because, like, they know ultimately they have to give you food.
Yeah. Yeah. it's a bad look if they let anybody, die of, starvation on the show.
I think it would hurt the show. Yeah, I think it would hurt the reputation. Mm-hmm. But for season 41, look, I'm very excited for it because I haven't watched a season live in a long yeah. time. I think you probably won't feel the pacing change that much
so.
Because of the shorter yeah. season. I think it's going to feel like an old one and kind of fresh, but like, in terms of what are my expectations for it? Like, do you mean, like, do I have any guesses at the theme or anything?
I mean, if you have some pitches for themes, I would love to hear them. But, you know, what the thing that I like to think about is, so people that went to go play, and I think they're filming the season right now, or they're just about wrapped with filming season 41, that people went from being in this lockdown situation, for the most part, for a year plus, then get transported to Fiji, and then basically come out of lockdown on the other side of this in the game of Survivor. And I really don't know
yeah.
what that is going to feel like in terms of being a Survivor season.
Yeah, that's interesting. I guess, like, it could be initially that the tribes will have a little more harmony because it's just like, oh my God, it feels so good to be around people, which I definitely have had that mm-hmm. feeling in the few times yeah. that I've been around people in any kind of normal feeling way. But also, when you are alone all the time, you get way more kind of calcified in your habits.
Yeah.
And I certainly get weirder. I often will tell my wife that if we hadn't started dating kind of exactly when we did, that I was going, if I lived alone for like another year, I might have gotten too yeah. weird to ever date and marry someone because
yep.
being alone, you just get really set in your ways. And I think that people will be bristling at a lot more behaviors potentially because it's just like you get so used to whatever your specific routine
yeah.
is. Even me coming back from Boston and being like, hey, I watch 4 episodes of Survivor a day now, and my wife's like, no, you don't. That's not that's not your mm-hmm. life. I think we could see a pretty big swing where it's like people are really, really happy to be around each other at first, and then they're much more annoyed at mm-hmm. each other more quickly.
Sean, do you have any Survivor ideas for seasons or for twists to the game?
I guess, like, I have these returnee season ideas that I've definitely seen people talk about them before. I do think they have enough people where they should do a first boot season.
Yeah.
I just think those people are always underserviced. A lot of times they're kind of have interesting personalities. And I would open it up. You tell me how you feel about this. I think it should be first boot from either tribe.
Okay. First,
you know what
person
I mean?
Like,
even if you made it to the fourth episode,
yeah.
but you were the first boot off your tribe, I think that still says something about you immediately being on the bottom
okay.
of the totem pole with who you're
with. I could
with.
See it because, I think it might take some selling for Jeff, but like, these people, they were the first ones that were voted out of their group. Something about them made them an outcast. Now, redemption for one of them.
Yeah, it's Island of the Misfit Toys, mm-hmm. right? It's all the people who couldn't fit in. So that, yes, that's interesting to me. You know, the like...
I've never heard it pitched that way. I've heard first booth, I've never heard first out of their tribe.
Yeah, I know. And I've mostly heard it first boot to it. And maybe that's cheating, okay. But I do think...
Sean, let me you just follow up. Okay. What if you're the first boot out of your tribe in an all-star season? What if you played and then you came back and then were the first person out of the tribe?
But in the initial season that you played and you obviously made it pretty deep. Wow, Rob. You're throwing me for a loop, man. I've never even thought about this. Look. Hell yes.
We could be a big target, probably.
I want to see you on TV. Hey, you've qualified. Yeah. You've been the first person booted by a tribe. Yeah. That's what we're saying the criteria is. We're not saying you never made it further. You know, if we're going to involve any returning players, let's get some returning first boots.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool. You'd be a huge target. Yeah.
Look, this guy's been to two tribal councils. Get rid of him.
But wouldn't that be a storyline for Jeff too? That now these people who couldn't fit in with anyone have banded together and unified to get rid of the returning player. They've found their common ground. Yeah. I mean, that's really beautiful. So that sounds cool to me. Yeah. And then the other one is just the other end of the spectrum, right? Oh, wait, you have another idea?
Is there a first boot that, like a traditional first boot that you really love watching and would want to see play on this season?
Geez, I mean, I loved Zane in Philippines.
Zane's a good one.
I felt like he had, as Denise said, there was more of a story to tell. Yeah. He had a story and I wanted to hear it. And so I wouldn't mind seeing Zane come back. I mean, the easy answer too is Francesca. We've got to see.
Well, they did that with her once. They did bring her back and then it didn't.
Well, she got first booted twice. So she's the legend. She'd have to be. She's first ballot for this season.
My favorite is Reem.
Yeah. Not bad. Reem and Zane alliance.
They'd be captains.
Who's changing the channel?
Yeah, that'd be good. I mean,
not me.
It is like a season where you have like really colorful characters where that these are the people who, you know, I do feel like that Survivor has almost shied away from. Like, I think that they go for people who I feel like they try very hard right now to cast more people who are like more interesting. Or like people like that are, I say that they're always trying to cast heroes versus heroes, but just basically, this person is going through this. This person's going through this. Whereas like, this would be a very eclectic group.
Yeah, it would. I mean, they were obviously, they were good enough to get
the
cast
first time.
First time, although maybe they were cast to be the first boot. And that was always production's plan, but I see what you're saying, and I think that probably production is really scared of having a super unlikable person be the winner, and then it turns people off for the season.
What I've said is that they could do like a tribe of first boots in like some other like three tribe season. Like I feel like that's like let's find like six that are really great to bring.
Well,
back.
What about this then? What about this? If it is like first boots and first and last, right? Like people who fell just short of final tribal.
Okay.
So if you were the very last person to like miss the window and the first, and those are the two tribes? Come on. Last one in, first one out.
We'll be right back with more of our conversation with Sean. But first, we want to thank our sponsor for this episode of the podcast. Those are our friends over at Hyundai, who are the makers of the all-new Hyundai Tucson, where they questioned everything to create the best Tucson ever. Of course, we're questioning everything over here all the time. Like, What's the conversion rate of Fire token to US dollar? Has anybody worked that out yet? Every inch of the all-new Tucson has been completely reimagined, resulting in an SUV loaded with available innovations both inside and out. From design to technology to safety, every aspect of the new Tucson has been improved upon. The SUV has been completely redesigned inside and out to create that best Tucson ever. All sorts of cool technological innovations, like a digital key that allows you to use your phone as a spare key to the Tucson. Plus, they've got user profiles and a 10.25-inch full-touch infotainment screen, which is perfect if you love gadgets like I do. Plus, as far as the design goes, check out the LED daytime running lights that are stylishly hidden within the front grille, making them invisible when not in use. And if you're lugging around a family like I am, you will love all of the safety features and cargo space there is in the Hyundai Tucson. So check out everything about the all-new Hyundai Tucson. Learn more at Hyundai.com. Now let's get back to catching up with Sean. How do you feel about the Fire tokens? Did you care about that?
You know, look, I'm not a smart guy. I was a little confused by the Fire tokens at first. As it progressed, I started to see how it could be cool that introducing this kind of economy to Survivor and really the idea of on your way out the door, being able to affect the game or reward someone who you were in alliance with and potentially help someone who is in the minority could stop, you know, could stop people from getting picked off one by one, maybe, because there would be advantages that you got as like your allies were able to, you know, accumulate Fire tokens for you. That idea was interesting to me. I think it could work. I don't think we have it yet, but they know better than I do. I'm certainly intrigued. It didn't ruin anything for me. I think there is like, we got to iron out some wrinkles.
Yeah, I feel like they didn't nail it with the first thing. I just feel like, though, that will they ever nail it with the Fire tokens? Like, is it taking us further away from what it is that we love about the show, which I think are the people and the stories? And then now we're adding in like this other whole like currency where now we got to figure out like what's going on there. We're like, I just feel like that making the show more complicated isn't getting us to where we want to be with it.
Right. So obviously it's interesting because I have started frequenting and lurking on the Survivor Reddit.
Yeah.
And I really had no experience with Reddit other than when I, you know, was hosting a podcast at a popular comedy podcast network. Yes. I would go to the Earwolf Reddit and I would read about it. And that was really the only thing I knew of Reddit. And it's so interesting to me entering a new community and seeing how it's all the same.
Yeah.
Reddit is Reddit. The internet is the internet. There's the same four arguments that are going to come up over and over again. And then there's going to be the people with the hot takes on the other side of it. And so it's really the same conversation happening constantly where like, you know, whatever on Earwolf would be like, I like this guy. I actually think he's really a jerk. And then people would have this conversation. You're like, this person's the funniest. It's like, doesn't do it for me. You go on Reddit. It's like, this player's the greatest. And it's like, actually, this player's overrated. And then ultimately you get into, there are too many advantages and production doesn't know what they have and we should go back to no idols and they, you know, they've ruined the game with all these weird advantages. The take I like that I've seen is Malcolm in his Entertainment Weekly Q&A saying, I think everyone should know what all the advantages are on the island.
Yeah.
Now that's kind of interesting to me. I don't have this traditional viewpoint. I think the game is fun and like It doesn't ruin it for me that they add new things to the game. But when I put myself in the shoes of the first person to have an idle nullifier used against them, and I never knew that existed, man, that feels like crap. Like, it's just like, this sucks for me. The way I go home to be like, I correctly and perfectly used the advantage that I had, and they had invented a new advantage off screen that I didn't know about that got used again. Like, I'm piecing so much together as my torch is getting put out. That kind of sucks. And so I do think it would have felt better even to go like, now we, because they would also have this great footage of like, are we worried at all about the idle nullifier?
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, I think if somebody had it, we'd have heard about it. Mm-hmm. And then it gets used. It just feels a little better. So I do think that like some kind of rundown would be cool. And I think, look, the personalities are what make the show work. Like all reality shows, they always have to do a good job with casting. I don't think having other stuff going on in the game really shrouds these personalities if people are good. Because David versus Goliath is the season that had the idle nullifier, but they did a great job casting.
Yeah.
And the season was awesome, and they focused on the people. And I think they haven't been able to do that in other seasons, but then they lean on the game and the advantages and the moves, and they go like, well, at least it's exciting what's happening gameplay-wise.
So I don't really have a problem with the like total number of advantages. My problem is that I feel like that they don't have the time in the episode to tell the stories that they're trying to do. If they had a two-hour episode, I think that the number of advantages and little doodads that they have in the game are probably fine. When they are out there on the island making the show, they're like, oh, this is super exciting. But then we've got a 42-minute show with a reward challenge, with a trip to the edge of extinction, with an immunity challenge, like with a tribal council. So we just have like whiplash trying to follow what's going on. So I think that that, for me, ends up being the problem. And just to speak to the David versus Goliath, I think that one of the things that really worked so well about David versus Goliath is that the theme itself is a story where you came in with like, oh, okay, these are the underdogs. These are sort of the favorites. And so, and the season played into that where then like the underdogs came together and they knocked out the Goliaths. Whereas heroes versus healers versus hustlers isn't a story.
Yeah. I enjoyed and saw your take on that theme, and we're like, this is just three things.
It's just three things.
They're not in opposition in any way.
Yeah.
It's really
improv suggestion gone wrong.
Yeah. Boats versus dogs versus casserole. It's like, well, what are we talking about?
Mm-hmm.
I agree with you. And I think that, and I think Millennials versus Gen X is one of the stronger recencies for the same exact reason. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And I really loved that season, and I watched the challenge. I'm really faithful to the challenge, and I'm excited that they're bringing in more Survivor people to that now. It seems like that new season has three or four Survivor players. Jay has shown up on there.
Yes.
He's at a disadvantage on the challenge. And one of the things, again, that I like about Survivor, going back to me being self-obsessed, is like when I watch the challenge, I go, well, I couldn't even walk in that house. Like, everyone's so big and strong.
Yes.
I'm like, I would just get like hospitalized the second I was involved in any kind of challenge against these people. When I watch Survivor, sometimes I'll see someone where it's like, I could maybe do that.
Mm-hmm.
I could make up some time on the puzzle, right?
Yeah.
And you saw Jay dominate in those challenges, and then he goes to the challenge house and he's just too small.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, it's disappointing because I really liked him on Survivor, and I wonder how these other contestants will do. I think they might fare a little better.
Who would you like to see make the leap from Survivor to the challenge? If you had a call with the challenge producers, like, Sean, we need some recommendations, because sometimes they come up with off the wall picks.
Right. Yeah. Well, I mean, I was happy that Natalie was there, and I was sad that she had to leave so early.
It's a no-brainer.
I think she could have like really dominated. You know, Michelle is getting in there. It looks like I think she'll do well. It was rumored that Wendell was going to be on there, and I would have really liked to see that. I think maybe that's not
happening. Sound like it.
Who else would be good? You know, a lot of, again, like Survivor, a lot of the great players, what's cool is like they're older or they have a different story. It's like, you know, you can't put Tony in the Challenge House.
Mm-hmm.
Would I watch it? Yes.
Yeah.
But I don't think it works. You really are drawing more from the younger crew of players. But what about like an Alec Merlino?
Yeah.
He seemed like he was pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
He could do well. You know, the player, you know, from that season, it's like, you can't put Christian in there.
Mm-hmm.
You can't put these people in the Challenge House. They're not suited for it. It'd be fun, yeah. They've done it. They, you know, that show got too intense, too. I mean, those challenges are too crazy where it's mm-hmm. like, again, sometimes the stuff doesn't make sense. They're like, hey, you guys wrestle on top of a moving truck.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Why?
What do you think about millennials versus Gen Z? Are we ready for that?
Well, you know, Survivor's always asking for teens.
Yeah.
They're really asking for teens a lot at the end of the show. They want the teens. I'm not that interested in it. But yeah, it could be time for millennials versus Gen Z. I mean, there's certainly a divide there.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think the take is? Like, what are those two groups' opinions of each other?
Yeah. I think there's no love lost.
There's no love lost, but what's the... Like, it was... It's so funny watching millennials versus Gen X because it was like on the show, they said millennials are lazy and Gen Xers are hard workers. When mm-hmm. Gen X invented the concept of the slacker,
yeah.
that was the entire thing was like they're slackers.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, this doesn't even ring true for me. Like they've kind of invented this trait for Gen Xers to have where it's like, we bust our ass and have real jobs. And millennials are like, we just kind of float around from gig to gig and we go surfing. And it was like, well, isn't that just being in your 20s versus being in your 40s? Like, mm-hmm. really, it's not, that's not the definition of being a Gen Xer. It should be like boomers. That's what we're talking about. But then the boomers are too old probably to play in the challenges. So I don't think it was right. So if you did millennials versus Gen Z, would you just be saying now millennials are hard workers and the Gen yes. Z just want their, yes. they want their device.
Mm-hmm.
I guess you could.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that would be,
that's what they
too.
Do.
Yeah. Bring back some of the millennials from millennials versus Gen X. Back in 2016, this is how we played this game.
Yeah. These young bucks have no respect for the way we used to do it four mm-hmm. years ago.
Sean, not to put you on the spot, but do you have a least favorite Survivor contestant?
Who have I really not enjoyed?
Or least favorite season?
Well... Again, I've avoided a lot of the whammies. Like I'm told, like Thailand's really bad, and I didn't watch that. I mean, I don't want to throw dirt on anybody. Like I didn't enjoy watching, like Brandon Hance. Like I didn't, you know, he's struggling with some demons out there,
mm-hmm.
and it didn't make the viewing experience more enjoyable for me.
Mm-hmm.
I would say that least favorite season, let me think as I've gone back through, I will say some of the seasons that were like, I had really, really high expectations going into Cook Islands because so many legends came out of that season. And there were so many great players who I enjoyed on it. And I said, well, this will be awesome. All these personalities. It's like Penner and Parvati and Ozzy and Yule and mm-hmm. Candace, all these people who were on all these other seasons I liked. And the season itself was not that exciting on the full watch. I mean, there's the discomfort, obviously, of the like racial divide to begin with. Then they're like, wait, this was a bad idea. They abandon it. But then, you know, I thought like Yul and Ozzy were both great and it was a really close vote. And that, you know, that final vote was exciting. But minute by minute, episode by episode, it wasn't that fun, actually.
I hear that. Yeah.
And I kind of wanted it to be like the last like four episodes. It's just like, okay, let's get through it.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it partially was maybe just that I had all those people on a pedestal where I was like, this is going to be really great because I love all the players.
I think it's a really good like middle. There's like right around the merge, it gets really good. But there's like a lot of like forgettable people in the pre-merge and then a little bit of a slog towards the end.
Yeah. So that one probably was the biggest letdown for me in terms of like what I thought I was getting versus what I actually was served.
How about this? Going through your rewatch, is there a particularly memorable dated reference that you've heard going back and watching old seasons of Survivor?
Wow.
Because in some ways, I mean, Survivor is like a time capsule of the last 20 years of like pop culture references that have made their way into the show over the course of 20 years.
I mean, it's such a cliche like that, you know, obviously the Jack and Jill reward was like the way they built it up and had to like tie in the story of like how Jack and Jill was teaching us some lessons that could be important on Survivor.
Jeff really sold it. He's like, hey, that film is all about family.
Yeah, that I think was a... people know of the challenge and the movie is a funny specific, but the framing of it, I don't think I remember just how specific he got on how it really was going to apply to their lives out there on the island. And so he was like, you know, you have your family here and Jack and Jill is about family. And so that, was pretty cool. I think like the brand placements stick out to me more, like there's like the Pringles challenge or whatever, like that. That stuff is really interesting. They did way more of it. And TV just did more of that back then.
Sean,
so that's
I have
cool.
Two cans of Survivor trivia question Pringles that I got in 2005. And I don't know what to do with them.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you've got a couple choices.
Yeah.
Yeah. You could chow down.
No. Not
you could
do
munch
it.
Them.
Yeah.
You can auction them off.
Yeah.
Or you can hold on to them as a precious memory of a time long forgotten.
Mm-hmm.
So
what would you do?
If I'm you?
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I auction them off for a good cause because I'm a super generous guy, but I, you know, I don't want to put that pressure on anybody else.
Okay.
You imagine the change you could haul down for two cans of Survivor Trivia Pringles cans.
What do you think it would get?
I don't want to overpromise, but we're talking 80, 90 bucks.
80, 90 bucks? Okay.
No, I think you could break a hundo.
Hundo. Okay.
Yeah. I think you could break a hundo. There's some freaks out there.
I'll do it.
You're going to do it?
Yeah.
Wow. I can't believe I made this change in the world.
Mm-hmm.
What I think was a pleasant surprise season now that I bashed Cook Islands.
Yeah.
Palau, I don't think, had a lot of hype around it. I watched that, and God, I loved that season. It was really fun, even though it was totally one-sided and dominant.
Mm-hmm.
It was a really great, fun season to watch. I think everybody was pretty interesting, and the like social dynamics at the end and the vicious gaslighting by hero Tom Westman of Ian and all that stuff. It was really interesting and entertaining, and watching that tribe and that they let it get whittled down to one. I would have thought that was boring if you described it to me, but it actually was one of my faves.
Do you have a best player in your mind?
Who I think is a best player.
Yeah.
You know, I try to stay aware that so much relies on like the context you're in and the texture of the game. look, I came into it without any baggage of knowing like the reputation. So when I watched Boston Rob, who was so iconic, like I was like, I liked him and was rooting for him. And I actually liked watching the season where he dominated and won, even though now I know everyone thinks that was the worst season.
Mm-hmm.
But I was influenced right away.
Just to say that we're counting down the top 40 ranking. It was the 39th best season. So,
oh yes, yeah, okay. So that, yeah. But I was influenced pretty early on because I did text Concepcion and I said like, "Hey, I'm watching Boston Rob, and I think the first one I watched was Heroes vs. Villains, and I was like, this guy's getting taken out."
Mm-hmm.
And I thought he was supposed to be the best. And he said, you know, for my money, Parvati's so much better because her social game is insane. And one thing he said that really stuck out is he said she really knows how to make use of a flawed ally, which is what Ooh. She did in that game with Russell. And that was very interesting to me. And he said, you know, you can drop her into so many different contexts and she'll still do extremely well, removing the idea of like they have a huge target on their back from reputation.
Yeah.
So some of those classic players like Parvati and Boston Rob were really impressive to me. Obviously, I've already given you your flowers.
What about an underrated person that stands out for you?
Yeah, that's a good question. Underrated that stands out for me. Well, I mean, I guess I would say it was eye-opening on Winners at War to see some of these players. I would say specifically Sophie and Michelle, who had been so underrated and had kind of been spoken of as maybe not deserving of their win. And you just see how the edit screwed them, and they were like so capable and so strategic and had a real style that was very adaptable. And Michelle's like playing from the bottom the whole time, and Sophie has to get blindsided because she's so on top. I think that was pretty cool. I just rewatched Philippines, and cause that was the one I had started with, when we were doing reality show.
Yeah.
And so I rewatched it cause I wanted to see those players. And it is interesting, the edits where you go, that season was really about Malcolm losing, and it wasn't about Denise winning. And she just got totally underserviced by the edit, and I guess why it happens, but then I really liked Denise on Winners at War as well. Now, I've seen some talk of people saying that her voting out Sandra was a very bad move strategically. Where do you fall on that?
Really? I'm surprised. What is the rationale behind that being a bad move?
I guess the thinking is just that Sandra had come to her and said, I'm willing to work with you. I'm going to like clue you in on all, mm-hmm. you know, all the idol business that's going on. And that Denise used that to eliminate her, seeing her as a threat, but actually she could have been an alliance for her.
Well, a couple of things about that was that Sandra is like basically saying like, hey, vote out Tony here.
Yeah.
And so that, imagine Tony goes out there, the season is completely different. So it does necessarily like change things up instantly from that point. Did Denise not have a good read on Sandra? I guess she felt like that she wasn't going to be part of her long-term plan. So, you know, that she gave her basically like the knife to ultimately, you know, cut her throat in the game. That was very graphic.
I thought it was thrilling. I thought it was such an amazing, entertaining episode. It made me already like a soft Denise fan. I was just like, holy shit, Denise like is rocking this season. Mm-hmm. Like I loved it. But then I felt like a chump where I was just like, oh yeah, maybe strategically it wasn't right, but it was just very exciting television,
mm-hmm.
which I'm always grateful for. But I guess I can see a version where, that wasn't, the right thing to do. But I guess those are three people who like probably coming out of Winners at War are not as underrated, but I had maybe underrated them in their own seasons as like not realizing just how much playing they were doing. I'm trying to think if there's another. It's so hard. I wish I had thought of some of these questions beforehand because I should have somebody who I think is just like underrated and like doesn't get credit for everything they did.
Yeah. Well, how about this? When you are watching these seasons, do you know the boot list of the season? Like when you go back into Gabon, do you know who's going out where, or you're just watching and you're...
No, I was excited. Watching the first episode, I was excited knowing I can assume Randy goes kind of far, I guess, because Randy's like someone who I've seen, who I kind of know. But mm-hmm. like... I'm not sure I even know who wins this okay. one.
Well, how about this? That, you know, at the, you know, possibility of looking foolish, but it would be fun. Could you give us your predictions? How far are you into Gabon?
I literally have watched the first half of the first episode.
Okay.
I do think the woman who is a nurse who is like obsessed with elephant dung is going to go home pretty early.
Jillian,
I don't think Jillian's going to make a deep run. She seems to already be rubbing people the wrong way.
It's my poker face.
Yeah. Okay. You're not giving me anything away. I mean, I was trying to think as I watched the opening credits, like, have I heard one of these names as one of the winners? Because I don't think anybody, I think Randy returned. I don't know if any, oh, Sugar returned.
Yeah.
So I assume Sugar makes it kind of deep.
I think there's one other returning.
Marcus the winner? I want to say maybe Marcus is a name that I've heard as possibly. Because mm-hmm. I was like, these names don't feel familiar. Like, I haven't heard of GC. So I don't know if he's going to be making a really deep run. He was the first one to the immunity idol, but is that seen as a selfish play? Mm-hmm.
I think you're going to enjoy it. I think you're going to enjoy it. Now, we've already passed it in the all-time top 40 ranks. I think it was like 26.
That was an incentive to watch it because I was like, oh, I'll go listen to that episode. I'll be able to do that once I get through it. Because you haven't hit a lot of the ones that I watched, you know?
It's polarizing. Some people really love it and some people don't like it as much.
Yeah. But that and Nicaragua are the two that mm-hmm. are kind of listed as like, these were sort of like the Jersey Shore type. Like we just cast like a bunch of interesting people who didn't know about the game Survivor.
Mm-hmm. So in Nicaragua, Jimmy Johnson plays, and of course you watch Philippines as Lisa Welchel and Jeff Kent. Mm-hmm. Do you like when they do stunt casting?
It certainly doesn't bother me. I mean, it's not like an issue for me. Jeff Kent, very funny exit speech, obviously. Yeah. Kind of worth the price of admission right there.
Yeah.
And just, I really like people saying, like, I'm not going to tell anyone about my past. Because, like, here's a question I have. Maybe you know, maybe you don't. So they play it up that, like, that one person recognized Jeff Kent.
Yeah.
There was
Dawson.
Dawson. So Dawson recognizes Jeff. Then she gets voted out. And then the rest of the season, we never mention whether or not Jeff is a Major League Baseball player. And then Jeff Probst says it at the reunion and people go, oh, wow. Yeah. Do you really think that no one else knew? Or do you think they just never showed anyone else discussing it?
I don't think anybody else knew. I don't think that there's too many, you know, Major League Baseball fans. I think that people, if anything, like follow their teams. But I think it speaks to, like, honestly, like I'm a huge Mets fan. I couldn't pick Mike Trout out of a lineup, not a baseball lineup. I'm talking about like criminal lineup.
Yeah. No, I agree. I mean, I don't recognize most baseball players, and it's not like they're wearing helmets that mm-hmm. obscure their face.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know what they look like for the most part. It's like, I know a couple.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mookie Betts, I could tell you. But, like, it's very few. And I went to a couple Red Sox-Dodgers World Series games. Mm-hmm. And I would bet that I could walk by some of those players on the street. yeah. that I saw.
Yeah.
And I would not know who they were.
Yeah.
I've got maybe, I guess this person's not underrated because they're so lovable, but man, Keith Nail.
Mm-hmm. You love Keith Nail. Stick to the plan.
When he's driving that tuk-tuk on the beach, when he, I mean this in all sincerity, when he's driving the tuk-tuk and he basically says something to the effect of like, you know, there's this and that going on in the game, but right now I'm riding on a tuk-tuk on the beach and I'm doing it with my buddies.
Mm-hmm.
That is a life philosophy to just stop, take it in. You know, I have a joke with my friend that we, where we say everybody else is stuck in traffic, but I'm just hanging out in the car listening to music.
Mm-hmm.
That is what Keith is doing in that moment. And I actually, it was a good reset for me. We watched that season. I was trapped in Boston, in sort of a depressing situation. And we took a weekend and I went with my boss to a house of a friend of his in Cape Cod for that weekend. We watched all of Second Chances in 2 days.
Yeah.
And we said, hey, we're getting all stressed out about like this and that and this production aspect and trying to shoot the show. And are we going to make the time? And, you know, like the all the COVID quarantine and all these stressful things. But at the end of the day, I'm making a TV show and I'm doing it with my buddies.
Mm-hmm. Keith Nail has a philosophy. Stop and,
yeah, Keith Nail has it figured out. Yeah, stick to the plan.
But he's also the same guy that talks about, I forget the exact quote, but he talks about Survivor is not
fun. It's not fun.
Going on a cruise is fun.
Yeah.
Survivor is not fun.
I like that level of honesty as well. Yeah, I guess he's not enjoying every moment, but he's just saying, mm-hmm. this isn't something I enjoy doing. That's not why I do it.
Yeah.
But it's worth it for me. So yeah, I like his honesty about like how it really isn't fun. It's very funny, especially in contrast to almost everyone else. It's like greatest adventure of a lifetime. Wouldn't trade it for anything.
Yeah. There's highs and lows. There's fun parts and there's not fun. Like anything. Good days and bad days. Let me ask you about, do you like when Sia comes in at the end of the season and then gives money to the people she likes? And is your end game, are you hoping to be so successful with the podcasts and the writing so that you could then indiscriminately give away cash to the contestants you like the best at the
finale?
Have
a Sia style walk on.
Yes.
Where I just lay a fat check
yes.
on my personal fan favorite.
Yes. Just now a lot of our fans know Sean Clements. He's a big deal. Between the Hollywood Handbook and everything else he's doing, he's going to give some money to the people that he really likes.
Yep. And I go and I walk right up there and I go, hey, Sierra, you talked a lot about big moves. How's this for a big move?
And then do you give her the money or you then don't give her money?
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Because that's the kind of big move she would respect.
Yeah. Yeah. She would
that's
never see
really
that
trying to win. I give the money to her mom.
Yeah. Here you go, Laura.
Yeah, that would be pretty juicy. I think that is what I do. Yeah, you sniffed it out, man. Mm-hmm. I mean, I guess I thought I was holding my cards a little closer to the vest, but yeah, I'm trying to have a Sia style glow up where I can show up with the, you know, with the sort of drapery and I can tell people that that I'm just going to write him a check.
Yeah. If you could give more money than Sia, I think that she would look bad.
Oh, I'd love that. Then I'm in a pissing contest with Sia.
Yeah.
I mean, look, Sia and I have a history. Obviously, I did an improv show where she was the monologist and we had some interactions. So there's a history there. She didn't try to stay in touch with me.
Mm-hmm.
So like,
did
yeah,
she give
I'm
any
salty.
Money to the person who was the best improviser?
Who did like the funniest scene move? You know, ultimately she did put one of the people from that improv show in her extremely controversial movie that came out this past year, and so she did give them money.
Yeah,
I mean I'm sure they were paid at
for
least
service.
Scale
right.
for their work on the film.
Mm-hmm.
Ultimately, I think they would give the money back to not be involved with the project, but you know, that's not
Can you do that?
I'm
can you give the money? Can you give the money back and they take you out
and
of the project?
Edited out.
Yeah.
Wow, that's interesting. I don't think so. Mm. But you know, digital technologies come so far, and they mostly shoot on digital now. Maybe you could get wiped out or get painted over with Christopher Plummer or something. And
Yeah. That's interesting. Maybe in the future we'll see more of that. People have like an opt-out.
That'd be cool.
Yeah.
You just turn the money back in.
Yeah, sort of like an athlete has like an opt-out in their contract. And so if they don't like pay, like the licensing of a song in a movie, like if you don't like, you know, pay every so often, then the person now, okay, guess what? Now The Rock's not in the movie anymore.
Well, and that reminds me. So is your famous vote out confessional, is that not in the that's
I
not
don't
in
think
the
you
edit
get
anymore.
It on CBS All Access. I think if you get like a bootleg.
Yeah, I watch on Paramount Plus and
they cut it out.
Man, I was licking my chops for that one. I knew it was coming.
Sean, imagine that. My greatest moment and now it's lost. Do the copyright.
I didn't even find it. I checked quickly on YouTube. I didn't see it. So yeah. It's you know.
Now you have to know somebody with like the VHS.
That's tough. I got to get out there and make more friends.
I think it might be in the DVD. Might still be in the DVD.
Well, you played it on your show. I listened to you know Outlist.
Yeah.
And so I had heard it and I was really excited when I knew Roger was going home. I said, "Oh, I'm going to see it like live."
Sorry about that. Incredible that you're even listening to the List podcast.
I am, yeah.
Yeah. Wow.
I've become addicted to the show and I'm like a real fan in a way that I haven't been of many things. And also, you know, the whole time I was on the East Coast in quarantine and in the snow, I put on a good portion of weight. And so now Survivor has become my elliptical show. You can see the elliptical facing the TV behind me. And so please be quiet, cats. So I put on Survivor and I've tried to get into some other shows. Like somebody told me, you got to watch Gangs of London. And I started watching it. It seems like a show I might like, but I couldn't believe I wasn't watching Survivor. And I'll give you, and this is a tip for anybody else who's in my same situation. When they do a challenge, I do a challenge.
What do you mean? Like you like update the elliptical settings?
I crank it up. I go as hard as I can for the entirety of the challenge portion of an episode. So if there's a reward and an immunity challenge, this is twice during the episode that I am burning and I get a good sweat going and then I can cool down a little during the strategy.
Yeah. I've never heard this before where this is like so immersive that you are pushing yours. Sean is pushing himself to his limits.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
You're imagining yourself. Now,
or some days it's Sean completely out of it.
Yeah. Sean
Get
is
going,
embarrassing
Sean.
Himself. Yeah. Sean, would you ever consider playing?
So I think constantly about what I would do if I was playing. But really what I wish is that I had played
previously.
10 years ago. I just don't see with a family, like I have a wife and a kid and I'm going
loved
on
ones.
The show and yes, who could come out for the loved ones. I don't know. I don't think I could leave. Having had to leave for this job and being gone for, you know, 9 weeks at a time, which is longer than Survivor. It was like, and that's like my job. Like I had to do it and I really hated it. It's just the likelihood that I would go on and, you know, have an unpleasant experience and embarrass myself in some way is, you know, that's on the table. I am so interested in like the social dynamic part of it and how I would do. Part of why I think I was predisposed to like David versus Goliath is at one point someone wrote a Reddit post about who would perform better on Survivor, myself or my podcast co-host.
Yes. Who would win?
So the longest, most thorough answer laid out that I would do better, partially because I don't feel as smart. My co-host, like, he's really smart and you can just tell he kind of can't hide it. I don't have that issue.
Yeah.
But they laid out that they thought I would play a Nick Wilson style game.
Yeah.
Where I was kind of, I mean, he almost got voted out first, but not a huge threat right away, had some social connections, like managed the threat level, but then wound up able to, was athletic enough to win a couple challenges near the end when he needed to, and all the like truly athletic people had been eliminated. And they thought that I could do that. And I thought, man, maybe you're right. Maybe I could. I told Cochran this and he was like, there was a professional writer and like comic persona on that season. It's odd they didn't compare you to him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mike White.
But yeah. Have you ever
run into Mike White?
You know, I haven't met Mike White. I'm a really big fan of his work.
Fan.
He plays doubles tennis with Cochran.
Wow.
Look, I'm not going to go through my whole resume here.
And you played tennis in high school and college, right?
That's right.
Yes.
That's right. Yeah. How'd you know that?
I watched a YouTube video today about you.
Little bit of research. Yeah, I played some tennis. So I feel like I could get in there.
Well,
I probably have to take something off it.
Because you had talked about that you had said that you were not like a Zac Efron in terms of in the musical theater and also playing being a student athlete. And I just watched that on another one of the podcasts.
So that's, hey, that's my whole life right there,
yeah.
Summed up in that clip from, I assume, Box Angeles.
Yes. Do Cochran and Mike White have like a doubles tennis tag team name? Do people do that?
They should. I mean, really what they should do is they should have Nick come up with a name for their duo, because he was so good at naming alliances. That would be a good service he could provide. But Cochran said that I could come and play with them sometime.
Yeah.
And maybe it's time for me to dust off the stick and get back out on the court.
Yeah.
I'm a little rusty, but
who would be your doubles partner? Hayes,
you know, I talked to one of my old bosses who I know likes Mike White's work a lot, who's pretty good. I told him maybe he should get out there with me. Really, but I haven't nailed it down.
Okay.
I'm taking submissions to be my doubles partner.
Do you think you could beat them solo against them playing doubles?
First time out, like if I just went out tomorrow, I don't think so.
Mm-hmm.
If I went out and played three or four times over the next month,
yeah,
and then I went out to play them, yeah, I think I'm going to cook them.
Yeah. Does that ever happen in tennis, a handicap match where there's one person takes on a doubles team?
Well, yeah, they call it Canadian doubles, or there's some other names for it, but it's one versus two, and obviously you don't...
Yeah.
They don't get the doubles alleys on your side.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, maybe I'm even overestimating whether I'd be able to do it, because there's so much conditioning involved in being the singles player.
Yeah.
Like, you're running so much more than they are. I might get gassed out, but
yeah.
I'd be willing to try it.
Could you tell us a little bit about the show you have coming up? Kevin Can F Himself.
Yeah, so this show is on AMC.
Now, this is what you were filming in Boston?
This is what we were filming in Boston. So the show is set in Worcester, and so it was always planned to film it in Massachusetts and get some authentic local hires who have the accent we want.
Yes. Did you reach out to Rob Mariano?
I actually did. There is an episode of the show, it's my episode, in fact, where they needed a Boston icon to appear. So I'll talk a little bit about the conceit of the show. The idea is that you open in a King of Queens, Kevin Can Wait style multicam sitcom, laugh track sitcom, where it's like the big, hefty, funny guy who everybody loves and his wife, who's a little bit of a wet blanket, and the world kind of revolves around him, and he gets in all this mischief, but everybody forgives it. And so you're in that style of show. And then every time the husband leaves the scene, you're in a single cam drama following his wife and her life and how much she despises and actually is throughout the season plotting the murder of her husband, who is a legitimately bad guy.
Yeah.
Because, like, you know, there's kind of throwaway jokes where they'll say, like, I'm not going to, you know, cross Kevin. Like, he got the mail woman deported for losing his package. And then it's like, no, this guy got someone deported from the country. Mm-hmm. Like, he's a really... You know, and these things, it's sort of like these things we laugh at on closer inspection are sometimes pretty dark. And so
like Jack and Jill.
That's the, yes, it's so much like Jack and Jill, and it really relates to our lives, doesn't mm-hmm. it, Rob? And we didn't have a connection. We'd been estranged like Jack was from Jill, but now you've been thrown in front of me and we're finding we have this shared history.
Mm-hmm.
So we had an episode. The one that I wrote is sort of like a Frasier style, like French farce, where everyone's kind of at the same restaurant. And Kevin is running back and forth between his like birthday dinner with his wife and his actual fun birthday party with his friends. And that's kind of the idea of what's happening. But then a New York celebrity shows up. And he gets involved in like an altercation and a contest with them, that it looks like he's going to lose, and an apparition of a famous Boston. I'm so sorry about my cats.
You're good.
I have three cats in here. An apparition of a Boston legend arrives to like give him the oomph that he needs.
Yeah.
And inspire him to like try to make his final push. So. Never actually know how much I'm even allowed to say about a show, but we'll see if I get in trouble.
Okay.
So anyway, we ended up, they really wanted to focus on athletes and sports stars. So we ended up getting a former Celtics player to come in and be the Boston legend. But I did pitch Boston Rob Mariano, mm-hmm. and I was watching the season. I was like, we should get Boston Rob to be the guy who says, like, do it for Boston,
hey,
Kevin.
Come on, Kevin. You can do it.
Kevin, you really gotta. Yeah. you gotta step up, Kevin. do it for me and Amber. That would have been really thrilling to me. Mm-hmm. Was it the right choice creatively? I don't know.
We'll see.
But it's funny you mention it, because I did say that we should get him. And yeah, that's what we were filming over there. And comes out on June 20th. And I think it could be cool. It's definitely very different.
Yeah. Yeah.
We're trying something new.
Yeah, it's wild. I was watching the trailer and it cuts between the multicam sitcom, and then I was like, oh my God, it's like a horror movie. It's scary.
Yeah, it gets really dark. It's so cool, like just the lighting changes where you're in the exact same space and it feels like this bright, like mm-hmm. it's, you know, Roseanne's living room, and then you just, the exact same space, nothing changed, but you just do the lights and it's like, wow, what a depressing house to be in. Like this, I could see how you could feel really alone and miserable here the way that she does. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of neat.
Okay. That's coming up in June on AMC.
That'll be on AMC. Yeah.
Yeah. And of course, Hollywood Handbook, going along. And of course, then, Hollywood Handbook, you've expanded.
Yeah. So we have a Patreon page. We're, you know, not unlike you. We're releasing episodes 5 days a week. There's, currently three different shows that are on our page. The Patreon's called The Flagrant Ones. The Flagrant Ones is our NBA podcast. And then Hayes and I make Hollywood Handbook, two different, iterations of that. And then, Carl Tart, our very funny friend, has a show called Carl Calls His Cousin on there,
mm-hmm.
And more, and we're working on more stuff too. So,
do you have a set time of the day that you do the podcast every day? Like, because I bet you are making a lot of podcasts, but you also have a day job. I just do the podcast.
So I had been off, like I got home from Boston maybe a month ago, and I had a little break. And so we tried to stockpile a lot, and we were recording like a bunch of episodes like during the day. But now, you know, because it's Zoom, it's reduced hours, because it's just mm-hmm. so hard to be in Zoom that long.
Yeah.
So I'm writing, on what will hopefully become season two of the show. It's not official or anything, but that's like 10 to 4, and so we try to record at 5. So then if we record from 5 to 6, then I can be inside around 6:30 for bath time, bedtime.
Oh, I think you're going to go run and get 4 episodes of Survivor in.
Well, that I'm losing time for, but you know, that I'm going to have to squeeze in. That'll become like,
I mean,
a
you could have been up to
work.
You know, halfway up to the merge in Gabon if you weren't talking to me.
It's true, yeah. I don't know if it was worth it, but I've done my best, you know, with this show. But I appreciate you talking to me, Rob.
Yeah.
There's so many better things you could be doing,
no,
obviously.
There's no better things I could be doing. This was incredible. And I have to tell you, I have a podcast co-host that I do one of my shows with called Rob and Akiva Need a Podcast, where we spin a wheel of random ideas. And Akiva is the biggest Hollywood Handbook fan. And I asked him to come on, and he said he couldn't because he was too nervous to talk to you, Sean.
Oh my gosh, that's so flattering. Oh wow. Well, you know, it was really a flyer when I was like, hey, I said to Kevin, like, hey, I started listening to this Survivor podcast and I'm watching, like, and people always ask us, like, will you do a one-off reality show episode? So hopefully this scratches that itch for all the Hollywood Handbook fans. But I said, reach out. And he came back pretty quickly. He's like, yeah, he said he'll have you on. And I was like, wow, does he know of our show somehow or anything?
Yeah.
But it turns out it's Akiva who whispered in your ear. That's so great. Well, please do tell Akiva that even though, you know, this episode was missed, you can have my email or we can talk if you have any questions about the show. I'd love to know how you found it. I'm always curious because it's a weird show. And the running joke is always that among our fans is that they aren't comfortable recommending it to someone because it takes like 10 to 15 episodes to get into. Because now there's like, it's so thick with sort of inside jokes and weird like tone things that people go, when they first listen, it maybe turns them off. So, I'm always curious how people found it and what made them stick with it.
Yeah.
If that was the case.
Yeah. I think he's, been with it for many years. So that, I don't know.
Well, that's really nice.
Story. Yeah.
Well, tell Akiva, I'm sorry to have missed him and that he should, get brave.
I don't know. He said
out.
He was too nervous to even talk to you. I don't know if he's going to send an email.
Okay. Well, he doesn't have to.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm actually doing fine. Like I'm doing great. So I don't need the email. I'm not like desperate for an email. I was being nice. So
yeah, very nice. Is there anything else that you want people to check out?
Check out. Just the podcast and go watch the show.
Yeah. Let me see. Do you engage with a lot of Survivor contestants on social media?
You know, again, this is all so recent. Mm-hmm. Like, I was really pumped when I got the follow back from you. First follow back I got was from Tyson.
Yes.
That was a real thrill for me. Tyson has, you know, he's pretty funny on there.
Yeah.
So I enjoy his humor and I was, excited. Of course, I sent it to Jason. I said, Jason, look, Tyson followed me. He said, oh, yeah, Tyson's great. He responds to DMs.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of had to flex on me a little bit and be like, this for me, this is old news. I don't engage with a ton of people online, but I'll reach out to Tyson if I have something interesting to say to him at some point.
Okay.
You know, he's got this pickleball thing going, which is very close to tennis.
Yes.
And I'm thinking, maybe I go get on the pickleball
courts.
He's
the top pickleball influencer around.
That's what I've seen.
Mm-hmm.
And I know a lot of people actually transition to pickleball if they were tennis players before. So I might try to get that going for myself. And then I reach out and then I go like, hey, just a fellow. This is just two pickleball guys talking. There's no fan
talking shop.
Celebrity dynamic.
Yeah.
So that's possibly a thrill. Cochran, I know I've met. So that's one who I'm in touch with. And then I've followed a lot of them recently and I kind of watch, but I don't respond. I almost responded to something of Stevens the other day. God, he had posted something and I had a like sort of thoughtful response to like a question that he had asked, but then when I looked in the replies, someone else had already basically said the same thing and I backed off.
I think you said you were gonna really zing him on something.
Oh, I would stick it to him?
Yeah.
God, that'd be a thrill too.
That'd be funny.
Just make him eat it. I'm always looking for a window. Any attention is good attention, as all reply guys know. Like, it doesn't matter whether you're making this person hate you. If they're responding, you won.
Could you imagine that you got into like a Twitter feud with one of the survivors?
Yeah, I mean, who are we going for here? Maybe it's me and
Russell Hantz, maybe. I feel like that he's like
Russell's active on there.
Yeah, yeah. Like, he's a fire
but
brand.
But he's on the right side of a lot of stuff, isn't he?
Yeah, I think so. That's what the word is. Yeah.
I'm loving Coach. I'm watching Coach cameos.
Yo, how about that? Have you gotten a cameo of any survivors yet?
I haven't gotten any survivors yet. I have gotten celebrity cameos in the past. My wife got me a Johnny Bananas cameo.
Oh, wow.
For like one of my one of my sober anniversaries. Yeah. She got me a Johnny Bananas and he did a really long speech.
I bet
to
that's
me.
Very expensive. Johnny Bananas cameo,
I'm sure. Hey,
that it goes for more than a Survivor
out,
Pringles,
you know?
Can
it may. I, you know, at the time it was early on in cameo too. I don't know if people were pulling down the big bucks yet. I got her a 90-day fiance person she liked. We got my boss, one of the Circle contestants from the Circle season one. We got Chris.
Oh yeah.
To and he did a really great long cameo for my boss Craig.
Do you watch the 90-day fiance also?
I've seen seasons of it. It's kind of in the realm that Survivor previously was, right? Where I've watched maybe three random seasons, but I haven't done like a deep dive where I've gone into
John,
all of
we've
it.
We've gone so long without Survivor. I'm podcasting 90 Day Fiance now.
Yeah. Well, it's desperate times, man. It'll make you do something wild. But are you enjoying it? The person I got her was Larissa.
Okay.
Who famously, you know, she says culty.
Mm-hmm.
She calls herself the queen.
Yeah.
That stuff. Yeah. What is it? She says like, she who come for the queen must die, something like that. But I got her to say that, to my wife to say that my wife's the queen of the house and anyone who comes for the queen
stays
must die.
Queen. That's right.
Well, that's Sandra.
Yes.
but yeah, I've gotten a couple of cameos with mixed results.
Yeah. All right. Well, Sean, thank you for spending so much time. This was incredibly fun to hear all your Survivor takes. And I'm so glad that you reached out.
Thank you for having me. I'm glad I did too. I wish I had more like on the spot take responses to these underrated player and stuff. I'm not, you know, I'm trained in improv, but I'm rusty. It's been a long time since I put on the jean shorts and plaid shirt.
is that the uniform? Yeah.
Yeah. For me, it was. Yeah.
this fall, then you're going to be in the game for real now with back to the new episodes.
I can't wait. Yeah. And if you want a take from me, maybe when it's airing live, you want to do a recap.
Yeah.
I'm available to you. I'm a resource.
It's great.
And I'll be thinking more with podcast takes for it. You know, I won't just be watching as a fan. I'll be watching as a broadcaster.
Yeah. All right. Well, this was such a treat, of course, that we are continuing here with our top 40 season countdown here for Rob Has a Podcast. Make sure you subscribe to everything that we're doing, of course, to get all of our podcasts. Go to robhasawebsite.com/iTunes and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Sean, any other plugs?
No, I think that's it.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right. Take care, everybody. Have a good one. Bye. It's a Support for this podcast comes from our friends over at Geico. Do you own or rent your home? Sure you do, and it's hard work, but you know what's easy? Bundling with Geico. Geico makes it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. That's a good thing, too. You're busy enough. Go to geico.com, get a quote, see how much you could save. It's Geico easy. Visit geico.com today.